My shield will stand against any foe when liberty and justice are threatened.
Bah! Your shield cannot stop my radioactivity!
Step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of here.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to The Bunker.
It's once again slightly more crowded than it was before, and
we
are quite thankful. And thank you for all who took a moment and said a prayer for a little 3-pound fluff ball named Java. If you weren't or missed the earlier show in the week, Java, our 3-pound dorky, which is a dachshund Yorkie mix, and I'm not making that up.
No, they really are called dorkies.
Yeah. Was taken to the vet. Sharon took Java to the vet first thing Monday morning because she had kind of a rough weekend. She wasn't keeping food down.
Well, yeah, Java was.
Java. Not Sharon.
I was fine.
Sorry, I was confusing the pronouns there. So it turns out that Java was sick with parvovirus. And if you know anything about dogs at all, you know that parvo is really, really serious, especially for puppies. The vet was not giving odds as to whether Java would see the end of the week.
Yeah. They were actually being very honest with us, and which I appreciated, and saying, frankly, you know, we'll treat this aggressively, but we cannot tell you that she will survive.
Mm-hmm.
When in truth, they don't always survive. And in fact, very often, depending on how seriously they are ill. Apparently, you can have various degrees of the infection.
Mm-hmm.
And how much protection she had left over from her mother. Did she get any from the baseline shot that she supposedly had a week before?
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of these things have factored in. Well, as of yesterday, she was still vomiting and had diarrhea. I went over there this morning, and Derek and I had literally talked last night. What do we do if she is really ill? Her chances look dim, mm-hmm. and she's suffering because this is very painful.
Yeah.
I'm told that it's probably like having your guts just twisted.
Yeah, basically, as I understand it, doesn't it just
strips the mucosa from the GI tract,
right?
Which is a protective mucus lining, mm-hmm. and it also it keeps you from absorbing nutrients. But more than that, you're now open to infection
from
normally friendly bacteria.
Right. So basically, you're open to just a really nasty intestinal. I mean, all of your intestines are now open to infection.
They are, and again, you know, they really hurt like they're being twisted. But add to that you're set up for septicemia. So
mm-hmm.
We weren't really very encouraged by her progress yesterday. I went in there this morning with. Instead of calling, I actually drove over there because they're not far away, and went in thinking I may have to suggest that we put her down.
Yeah.
And instead, they said, "Do you want to take your baby home?"
Yeah.
And she had a miraculous night.
Well, I mean, miraculous is about the only way to describe it, because if you do any searching on the internet for parvovirus, you'll see pretty quickly how serious this is.
Mm-hmm.
It's very contagious. And it's likely that the other puppies that she was at the pet shop with were probably exposed to it.
I would venture to say other owners are dealing with this today.
So it's really a miracle that she's back with us. And Murphy's pretending that he doesn't care, but we know better.
We do indeed. So we are praising God
even
more so today than we did yesterday.
Yep.
She's doing okay. And she actually ate today. She hasn't thrown up. She's doing fine.
Well, as we record this just after 7 p.m. Bunker Standard Time, 0100 Greenwich Mean Time, we've got part two of our interview with Carl Schwartz on the depleted uranium scandal, which is exploding. He gave a couple of interviews on the radio yesterday, and he's got, interestingly, a the hometown newspaper in George Bush's hometown has devoted its entire issue today to the depleted uranium story. The newspaper in Crawford, Texas, which is the, what is it, the Lone Star Iconoclast?
Uh-huh.
Once they saw
the report.
They're
living up to their names.
They certainly are. Once they saw the report by Dr. Chris Busby, the one that we linked to in yesterday's show notes, the PDF file, he decided that he had to, now this being the editor of the Iconoclast, had to do the entire episode, devote the entire episode to this story. And we understand how he feels, because this is a big, big deal.
It's huge, and I'm so glad they did this. The headline for his own editorial is, Have DU Will Travel.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to go to Watcher Magazine, or just go to the webpage for the Iconoclast. You know what? If you just go to Watcher Magazine, you'll see that Have DU Will Travel stories on there. There's a link there at the bottom of the story mm-hmm. that takes you to the entire edition. You can read all of his stories on
right.
there.
Number of interviews with experts in depleted uranium, radiation, munitions. An article indicating that the Army's just placed a new order for more tank shells produced from depleted uranium.
Mm-hmm.
So a real good collection of articles that'll get you up to speed on what this is all about and why we're making such a big deal of this story.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we'll have part two of our interview with Carl Schwartz, and he'll lay more of those cards on the table here in just a few minutes. The earth is rattling again.
It is. Not here.
No. San Francisco, which of course is always a little bit on edge. They have been ever since the big quake about 100 years ago. But the fact that Stan Deo is saying, look, if you live in that area, move now,
mm-hmm.
would make me nervous, too.
It would. And in fact, he's saying a lot of California is up for grabs, one might say. The Patriot Act renewal is clearing many hurdles. And you know what? I think it's going to go through.
Mm-hmm.
What a shock.
Yeah, Arlen Specter says they've got a few more things to tweak or, you know, work on as far as the final shape of the bill is concerned.
Well, you know what that means. That's Washington speak for I haven't gotten enough favors granted yet.
Right, yeah. I've got to twist a couple more arms. I've got to get, a couple amendments attached to it with funding for pet projects.
Mm-hmm.
But considering that it, what was the vote? 69 to 30 mm-hmm. to bring the bill to a final vote. It's going to sail right through. So, so we've got another few years at least of this bill, which grants the FBI all kinds of power that our forefathers would have just been shocked to see.
I know. Well, you know, along the same line, there's a debate about whether or not everybody should have their DNA profile put into an FBI database.
Mm-hmm. And there are some who would probably say, well, why not? It's a good idea. We should all be on file. That way, if we ever go missing or if we have another 9/11, they can identify, remains of victims more easily. They can track victims of kidnappings, abductions more easily.
I would say that the Tom Cruise movie.
Mm-hmm.
What was the name of that
again?
Oh,
Majority Report.
Majority Report. That's the one you need to take a peek at if you're going to think about DNA profiling, because there are those out there who claim that they can identify genes that denote alcoholism
mm-hmm.
and perhaps other traits that are less than desirable mm-hmm. in people. Maybe fat genes or perhaps genes that make you more prone to shoplift.
And, of course, once this database gets out into the public, as it eventually will, because what's happening with a lot of these databases that are being used by law enforcement is that they are being farmed out to mm-hmm. private companies
mm-hmm.
that actually do the data mining and then sell the access to the databases to the FBI and to law enforcement agencies around the country.
Oh, exactly. But my thinking is if they put every DNA profile mm-hmm. of each child born into the database.
Right. They can predict.
Then suddenly they'll have the computer will go ding, ding, ding. And they'll go, I see a child's just been born in Missouri that, I'm sorry, but your genetic profile means that this child will become a sex offender
mm-hmm.
at the age of 16.
But even in a lower key level, and maybe just as insidious, they start tracking you right from birth. Well, we can see that your child is never going to be anything but a factory worker.
Mm-hmm. Your child is a Delta.
Yeah. Yeah. Brave New World.
Yeah.
We can see that your child is destined to become a doctor. Well, what if the child doesn't want to become a doctor? What mm-hmm. if the child wants to work at the Chrysler
plant?
For
the good of homeland, you have to be a doctor.
Exactly. This is what you're... we see that you have a predilection toward heart attack. Well, your life insurance costs are going to be triple scale. Well, I've been perfectly healthy. I've never been. Nope, sorry. It's right here in your genetic profile.
I'm sorry, you can't have that pizza, sir.
That's right. So, yeah, there are all kinds of reasons why this is a bad idea.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's even being debated and talked about is, again, disturbing, because you would hope, you would think, you'd like to think that
you'd
somewhere,
like to, you'd think
somewhere
so,
in the
you?
Government, people would just say, no, no, this is a bad idea.
You know, there are many other stories in Watcher Magazine today, and we... Because we have a wonderful interview with Carl coming up, we don't want to take too much more time. Mm-hmm. So go to WatcherMagazine.com, subscribe. You know, we send this out every day, so you can just really quickly look at the headlines. Mm-hmm. And if you see something you like, then you can go to Watcher Magazine. It really makes for an easy morning, and I usually send these out around 10 a.m. Central Time. But there's one more thing that I want to mention before we go to Carl, mm-hmm. and I see that by the look on your face, you have one too. I just want to talk about the mailman that came going by our house the
well,
other day.
Well, yeah, that's really bizarre. I'm glad you brought that up, because I'd forgotten about that. I've got a different one last thing. So, but yeah,
not
that was
Steve
really...
Jobs, one more thing.
No. I wish. That was really weird. On Saturday, we were looking out the front room window, and we saw a mail truck pull up in front of the house and sit there for about 20 seconds.
Which is normal.
Yeah, but then...
Sit there, deliver the mail. Mm-hmm. Okay, we see this all the time.
But instead of delivering the mail, he just made a U-turn and went back the other way.
Right.
And then about 15 minutes later, comes another mail truck, and this one actually stops and puts mail in the mailbox.
Right.
And then continues on.
Uh-huh.
Followed about 15 seconds later by a third mail truck, which pulls up in front of the house, stops, and just sits and waits.
Uh-huh.
As though we're trailing the second mail truck.
Exactly.
And then about 5 minutes later, a fourth mail truck comes shooting down the street about 10 miles over the limit. Four mail trucks in the span of about 40 minutes.
How many mail trucks does it take to deliver mail to the bunker?
I'm not sure. Yeah.
One to scout out the bunker and report back to his friends.
Dude, check it out. It was, yeah, it was quite unusual. It's the kind of thing you'd expect to see in an episode of The X-Files. No, the one last thing I wanted to mention was the story that popped up in the Jerusalem Post today.
Yes, I'm glad you brought that
this
up.
This is really interesting. The Jerusalem Post reported today that Pastor John Hagee, who is a founding member of a group called Christians United for Israel, along with a rabbi his congregation is in San Antonio, like mm-hmm. Pastor Hagee's, Rabbi Arya Scheinberg, had convinced Jerry Falwell to change his belief on how you get saved, how you go to heaven, to believe that Jews, because of their special favor with God, can get to heaven without accepting Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. Now, this was eye-opening, to say the least, because Jerry Falwell is a pretty outspoken guy when it comes to saying what he believes. And he's always, like a good Baptist preacher said, that you got to believe in Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior in order to get to heaven.
Right. Now, before you go running and spinning in circles, there's another shoe to drop here.
Yeah. So the Jerusalem Post carried that story earlier. And then about 12 hours later, the Associated Press reported that Jerry Falwell is denying the report in the Jerusalem Post, that he does not believe Jews can get to heaven without becoming Christians. Now, our brothers and sisters of the Jewish faith, sorry, but that's what Jesus said.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus
was
preaching.
He says, I am the way, the truth, mm-hmm. and the life. He's the Messiah.
He laid it out very clearly, and he was preaching to the Jews. His ministry was to the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
So if we accept Jesus as Lord and Savior, we take his word seriously, we have a real hard time getting around that statement. That is very clear.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jerry Falwell is saying, well, no, that has been and is still my position. And in fact, he went on to say, he told the Associated Press that Pastor Hagee and Rabbi Scheinberg have signed affidavits denying that they ever said that to the Jerusalem Post. So
what's going on? Why would the Post print something?
Did they get snookered?
Yeah, snookered, or I'd like to think they wouldn't knowingly print a false story.
You would think so. I mean, the Jerusalem Post is a high-profile paper, and it wouldn't
get... We use their stuff all the time.
Yeah, it wouldn't be able to slip something like that past its readership, you would, very easily.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, just a little interesting tempest in a teapot. Kind of curious to find out what's up with that story.
You know, we may be able to find out more about that this weekend. We're going to be speaking with Barry Chamish.
Yes. Good point. We'll have to make a point of asking him about that because this is really curious. So, yeah, we'll have his interview next week and we'll talk more with him, not only about that, but about what's going on in Israel and some of the maneuvering going on for control of Jerusalem.
That's right. Well, speaking of interviews, we have part two of this amazing interview with Carl W. Schwartz. I know those of you who listened to yesterday's first part, you're very anxious to hear the rest of this story. Trust me, it gets even more horrifying.
We're back with Carl Schwartz, and we're talking about the, well, the poisoning of the earth, basically, by the United States military and allies through the use of depleted uranium munitions. Carl, how many different types of weapon systems are using depleted uranium right now?
Well, you would like to think of just the bigger bombs, you know, the shock and awe stuff, but they actually have rounds, you know, bullets that have DU tips on them, all the way down to 7.62 millimeter. I haven't seen any for the 223, you know, the M4, the new M16.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But they use it also in the 50 cal, the 50 caliber sniper rifles. I mean, you talk about a bullet that'll blow a hole through the wall. If you ever saw the movie Navy SEALs.
Yeah.
Good, you know, when the guy shot the guy behind the wall, I mean, that would have been either a tungsten or DU type of bullet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're using it in the AY-10 or the Warthog, the tank killer. They're using it in Apaches, Bradleys, Abrams, JDAM bombs, cruise missiles, you name it. And it's almost like anything they can put it in to ship it over there and put it off on somebody else, that's what they're doing.
Well, let me put myself in the position of being with the Defense Department for a minute. Well, we need stuff that is going to protect our guys. This stuff is cheap. We got lots of it, and it's extremely dense, and it makes for a great weapon and a great tank.
Oh yeah, I mean with a 50 cal with DU, you could take out a Bradley. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, you could riddle it with holes.
Yeah.
So.
But isn't the point of war to be very judicious about your target?
It is. And that's one of the reasons we're coming public with this. This is turning out to be a very indiscriminate weapon.
Mm-hmm. And those are actually banned, as you said. Weapons,
yes, it is.
Yeah.
Indiscriminate type weapons. I mean, this is not a matter of taking a bullet and shooting an enemy or dropping a bomb and killing a tank. This is the type of weapon that you shoot it and you kill what you're shooting at, but then it continues to kill for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
There's a guy,
and it may not be just right there where you fired. You know, it may be thousands of miles away.
Mm-hmm. And we accused a guy. The United States accused a guy named Jose Padilla of planning to blow up a dirty bomb, and we stuck him in a brig in South Carolina.
He's been there for a long time.
He's been there for over 3 years. They just recently filed charges against him, but they were holding him as an enemy combatant without access to an attorney for a long time.
That is
on
correct.
The charge of planning to blow up a dirty bomb. What sounds like to me, from what I'm reading in this document that you sent, Carl, that we have basically done that in Bosnia, Kosovo, Afghanistan, and Iraq. We've been essentially riddling those countries with dirty bombs.
Yes. I mean, I've been calling these DU dirty bombs because that's basically what they are. Some of the soil samples that they took in Afghanistan around Tora Bora and some of the other places that we hit not only had depleted uranium, they had neptunium, U-236, and plutonium in them.
As you say, that only comes from a nuclear refinery.
Exactly, and they didn't have any of those in the country, and they're not indigenous in nature. So, you know, they knew this had to come from U.S. bombing, so, you know. The shock and awe we put on Tora Bora and places like that.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm looking at a list of banned weapons. It's not just WMD and WIE, weapon of indiscriminate effect, but also a WSI, which is a weapon of a nature to cause superfluous injury, and a WUS, weapons of a nature to cause unnecessary suffering.
Yes. And the suffering over in these countries, before we got on the air, we have somebody right now that's gathering photographic evidence in Afghanistan and Iraq. We're going to make these photographs, known to the world. I mean, so I've already seen some of them. They're just horrifying.
I've seen some of those, and they are so disturbing. Mm-hmm. Pictures of babies.
Well, it's
and
happening
fetuses.
Here too. I mean,
oh gosh,
you're having children born to our soldiers after they served. That literally, when this infant is born, they're nothing but a piece of meat. They're being born without limbs, without mm-hmm. brains, you know, without
right.
intestines. I mean, just all types of gross deformities. And this government does not want you to know that this has come home to roost on this nation.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at some information by Captain Joyce Riley. You may know her from the Power Hour. Riley, yeah, Dave Van Kleist. A speech that she gave recently, and she lays out the numbers. There were about 697,000 active duty service members and 180,000 National Guard members went to the Gulf during the first Gulf War. About half of them are no longer in the service, but over 10,000 of them are dead.
Yes.
One out of every two out of the
dead,
service.
They're dead from chronic and debilitating conditions that they contracted after they served there.
Mm-hmm. And it's a lot higher than what you'd expect from a sample of the American population, and a lot higher than what you'd expect from a population, meaning those in the military, who are, you would think, of above average fitness levels. I mean, you have to be to serve in the military, and yet they're coming home and they are debilitated, many of them, and again, a lot of them are just no longer with us. It looks like the tip of a very disturbing iceberg. This is really...
It is, and somebody just handed me a note and said, make sure you talk about this, the effects on DNA in future generations.
Oh, it's horrifying.
We're already seeing birth defects all the way back to Desert Storm, all the way back to Bosnia, all the way back to Afghanistan, the troop rotations.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that this government does not want... I mean, I even wrote about this in the book, and I think you and I discussed it off-air, Derek, about the doctors and nurses at Linesville were ordered, if they found DU exposure, just take the blood, freeze it, and they'll check back in 2 or 3 years. They didn't even want a written medical record or tell the soldier the truth about his true medical condition.
Oh, my goodness.
And one of the people we're collaborating with on the release of this information has had 87 of our soldiers post-Iraqi freedom come through their labs for testing, and all 87 of them were confirmed to you.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this report, the paper that you sent to us. The authors...
Let me just say this. While we're talking here, I just forwarded you... I just got another email from Dr. Rocky.
Okay.
Oh.
And I just
his ears are burning somewhere.
Yes. He knows we're doing this interview right now, but he just sent an email. Just reading the first two paragraphs, I just went, yep, that's exactly what we're talking about right now.
Dr. Rocky, by the way, is featured prominently in the DVD Beyond Treason, which features Joyce Riley, and the story that he tells about his team and what they suffered.
His credentials, he's the former U.S. Army's DU team health physicist, and he's also the former U.S. Army's DU project director. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was he had a team of people sent in after Desert Storm, 100 people, and about 60 of them are either dead or their lives have been just upended because their health is just shot.
And he suffers from extreme health problems.
Yes, he does. They sent them in there knowing this stuff was laced with plutonium, U-236 and everything. You know, it's hot is what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And no gloves, no masks, no protective clothing. And as soon as he started going public about this as a whistleblower, they've just been hammering and hammering on him to try to get try to shut him up.
Yeah. Well, we posted the article that you forwarded to us by Dr. Rocky, and the line that jumped out at me was his assessment or what the team's assessment was when they got there and began to realize what they had found in Kuwait and Iraq after the Gulf War. And he said we could sum it up in three words. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then he was telling me the other day, last time we spoke, is that he was ordered by his superiors to do an after-action report, after he went over there, exposed 100 people to this deadly stuff, and he did the report. It was to be delivered to Madeline Albright, and they turned right around and gave Kellogg Brown and Root, owned by Halliburton, a big no-bid contract to go clean it up.
And again, let's bear in mind that this was not during the Bush administration. This was during the Clinton administration.
Exactly.
At KBR, Halliburton, during the, and this was while Cheney was the CEO of Halliburton, got
well,
this contract.
This was about a year, year and a half before he became CEO.
Okay, all right,
oh,
all right.
Okay.
His ties were there.
Okay.
Still very strong ties to Bush Sr.
Yeah, but
and
the point.
Also to Halliburton. So.
But it, the point being, again, this is not a Republican versus Democrat issue.
No. Yeah. And this is my assessment of this, looking at it both, you know, I'm playing the journalist here. I'm doing the research. I'm getting the facts out. But I'm also looking at this as the head of my company, of what is it going to take to address this? You know, what is it going to take to do something about this?
Mm-hmm.
It's not a pretty picture.
No, it's a disgusting one. Well, how did you get the information that you sent to us?
As soon as I wrote that article that appeared on Rents back in December about depleted uranium, I'm getting somewhere between 50 and 60 emails a day from all over the world, from scientists, from people that are directly affected by it, from medical people. I mean, it's just unreal, the database that's forming here real quick because of one article.
You know, that's a heavy burden to bear, Carl. Having information that many people are, A, unaware of, and if they were aware of it, their first desire would be to say, oh, well, our government wouldn't do that.
Yeah, well, they're going to find out the hard way that they have done it.
Mm-hmm.
I think what has happened here, there is some, you know, what I call wafting of air. You know, I mean, there's no separation of degrees in air. I mean, once this stuff gets airborne, it can go in a lot of different directions. And I think some of it's being swept up into the jet stream.
Mm-hmm.
It's just dropping all over us.
Well, think of it as like a giant restaurant, and you've got an area that you set aside for smoking, and then the rest of it is non-smoking. You can't separate the air. It just will not happen. And this stuff, as you mentioned, it gets into nanoparticulate size, less than 5 microns in size, which means inhale it, and it lodges. It basically starts traveling through the bloodstream.
Yes. Imagine all the doctors and nurses who have been handling all these casualties and everything ever since Desert Storm, and not a lick of protection was provided for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's more than that. We may be eating meat that is contaminated.
We may be
eating fish or eating vegetables.
Drinking water.
It could be in your food chain.
Mm-hmm.
It could be in your bloodstream. I mean, if you had a child that, you know, that served over there, you know,
mm-hmm.
being exposed to it is highly likely. I know when my son came home, he had the same clothes that he had on while he was over there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he came by my house as soon as the plane touched down, and
mm-hmm.
he was still wearing the same clothes that he had on while he was on over there.
Sure.
And like the one story, I sent it to you, this Laurie Brim's son that passed away. He didn't even finish his tour of duty while he was over there. He came down with cancer and died before the 1 year was up.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
He was a mechanic.
He wasn't even out there using the weapons. He was just dealing with the vehicles that had been, came back covered with the dust.
Covered with the dust, yeah.
And this stuff is just laced all through the dust all over Iraq.
I saw, we were looking at a PowerPoint presentation that we found on the web while we were researching this afternoon, and it gives a very graphic example of what happens when these uranium isotopes get into the body, what they call the uranyl ion, and the way it just sort of binds to the DNA helix, the helical molecule, and that, of course, changes the way the molecule will act. And then, of course, if it's emitting these free radicals inside the body, it changes the actual structure
mm-hmm.
of the DNA molecule.
Yeah, and as I said, DNA itself is a molecule that if you combine a whole bunch of them together, then you get what's called a chromosome. And this will actually cause chromosome breakage.
Mm-hmm.
It will also cause
chromosome damages.
Yeah, and it will cause the sister chromatids, which is, you know, one from your father, one from your mother, to actually exchange pieces.
Yeah, well, the other thing that I was thinking of when I read that document that you're looking at, I've never been much of a believer in chemtrails.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I've thought about this, you know, if this stuff is going global on us, and knowing that you could spray phosphates out and at least get it to bind with something since it has an affinity for phosphates.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, chemtrails may be this government's lame way, half-assed way of dealing with, you know, DU exposure they've put on us, you know, without telling us anything about it. Because I know that 20 years ago you didn't see chemtrails. You see them now.
That's a good point.
Yeah, we've noticed them here in St. Louis a couple of times in the last 3 weeks.
So they start parts of the country that they crisscross, and mm-hmm. I mean by noon, you know, a perfectly clear day, you can't see the sky. You mm-hmm. can't see the sun hardly.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks like around here when they do it, it looks like somebody's playing, you know, a psychotic tic-tac-toe.
Tic-tac-toe, up in the sky, yeah. You know, you got everything but the O's, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you spray the phosphates out, the theory is that the uranium dust will bind to the phosphates as it drifts down through the air and then precipitate out.
Yeah, but you still got a problem with what happens when it gets down, because even with a phosphate binder, you still don't want that thing in your food chain or your water.
Because no. It's still radioactive.
Yes.
I mean, all you've done then is you just prevent it from binding to molecules inside the body, but it's still emitting radioactivity.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's still alpha particles coming off, and that's the bad part. You know, the alpha particles are what get you.
Now, again, the authors of this paper, how did they begin working on this? Who are these guys, and what are their credentials?
Well, they're both scientists in the United Kingdom, and they were aware of what was being detected at this. It's actually a UK government lab, and they were aware of these towers and what was being detected. You know, what they wanted to know was to what extent, you know, was this being detected in the United Kingdom after Desert Storm? Mm-hmm. Not Desert Storm, Iraqi Freedom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they wanted to know, did we get a bunch of this up here? Well, they found out more than they bargained for.
Mm-hmm.
There's even a spike. You have to know how to read this and go look at chronology. There's even a spike on those graphs that went up considerably elevated. They didn't go high enough under UK law to mandate a report. But even Chechnya created a spike.
Mm-hmm. When the Russians went in to put down the rebellion in Grozny?
Yes.
Huh.
So evidently they've got their own version of DU weapons, or they happen to have hit something, you know, that put the put quite a bit of this stuff airborne. It may be the same problem we've got here in the States. I'm aware of at least one place here in the United States where DU is not even stored in containers. It is literally piled up on the ground, and the wind's free to take it wherever.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we found an article that we posted to Watcher Magazine a couple of weeks ago regarding DU cleanup taking place at a proving ground in Hawaii,
mm-hmm.
and the people there were not aware that DU had even been tested there.
Yes.
And of course, as we mentioned before a couple of times, Sharon's father worked for a number of years at the Jefferson Proving Ground, which is in southern Indiana, along the Ohio River there, where DU rounds were tested, something mm-hmm. like 75 tons?
Yeah, about 150,000 pounds, and it's about a 500-acre area of the proving ground that is off limits because I can't remember how many inches of topsoil are just saturated, but it's considered an EPA nightmare.
Mm-hmm. So
well,
you know, this would definitely be
a hot spot, and the question is, to what extent is that running off in the Indiana streams and
down the Ohio River?
Well, clearly it is, because tests have shown that it's in the food chain.
I mean, I was sent a chart today. It was an article, and this graph was inserted in an article that had to do with outbreaks of breast cancer. And the blackest part of the maps, you can very easily see, are within 100 miles or so of either enrichment centers, weapons labs, or some of the older nuclear plants in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And here,
I mean, there are certain, you know, prices to pay for progress, and evidently some of them are pretty grim.
You know, and I don't think that our government can possibly say it. We didn't know. Because they started playing around with this stuff back in the 40s.
Well, actually, in 1943 was when they were first talking about using DU-type weapons,
mm-hmm.
development of those weapons. It just took them a long time for somebody to, you know, get around to doing it.
Well, and apparently there was a memo in 1947 from the U.S. Atomic Energy Commission that said, you know what, we've taken a look at some medical experiments on these human subjects regarding this radiation, and, quote, it is desired that no document be released which refers to experiments with humans and might have adverse effects on the public opinion or result in legal suits. Documents covering such work should be classified secret.
Yes, and, you know, the government hides behind this thing they call the Ferres Doctrine. It's F-E-R-E-S. It's a Supreme Court decision going back to, like, 1951.
Yeah.
Ferres died in a barracks fire. He didn't die from the government shooting him full of LSD or plutonium to see what effect it would have on his body.
Huh.
And one of the veterans that we're in direct contact with, he went to a private lab when he got so sick and tired of messing around with VA and found out that the vaccine he was given going into Desert Storm was not anthrax, it was HIV. Experimental HIV vaccine. I mean, it just completely ruined the guy's health.
You know, it's...
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, if this is binding with DNA, there are DNA viral particles out there. How is it affecting the DNA and viruses and perhaps mutating them into some from harmless to very, very dangerous? And how is it affecting plant life and other biologicals?
Well, it could be, you know, affecting fish, water, plants, air, dairy cattle.
You know, I would venture to say it's possible if you tested... you know, a broad cross-section of the American people, you'd find a lot of us.
You probably would, but, you know, I've gone in for a lot of medical tests just for this, that, and the other, and, you know, key man insurance and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I have never, ever had a doctor test me for DU exposure.
No, it's not something you normally run into when you go to the clinic.
No, but, you know, it's really interesting because I know that one of the side effects as regarding Gulfmore syndrome is just general malaise and lethargy and joint pain. And
yeah.
These are things that are becoming all too common among American people. And they're blamed on a variety of things.
Fibromyalgia.
Stop and look at how many things that 25 years ago didn't even have a name.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my ex-wife came down with fibromyalgia.
Yes, mm-hmm. I have it too.
It's just what they called it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But what was really strange was her left knee swelled up, her right one didn't, and within 2 years her left knee was bone to bone and had to be completely replaced, and the right knee is perfectly healthy.
Oh, my goodness.
And now, last time I saw her when I was through Arkansas back during the summer, her left elbow is locking up, but the left elbow's fine.
Huh.
The right is just literally like a 90-degree angle. She can't even straighten her arm out.
Wow.
And it's just there's something amiss out here, and it's we got some folks in our government I think are directly or and possibly indirectly to, you know, behind it. They don't want to talk about it, and they sure don't want anything to incur liability for their actions.
Well, we're going to talk a bit about what we might be able to do in order to encourage some people to demand that their lawmakers be held accountable for this. We're talking with Carl W.B. Schwartz, and depleted uranium is the topic. We will continue this discussion tomorrow on PID Radio.
Well, we have not heard the last from Carl W. Schwartz, not only with this interview, but I'm betting he is out there hitting the radio trail and the television trail, if he can get on there too,
mm-hmm.
because this is a man who believes passionately that what we are doing is wrong.
And he's got a personal stake in this because one of his sons is serving in Iraq. So this is something that strikes close to home for him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But this is not somebody, he didn't just pick up this issue because of his family connection to it.
Right.
He has been speaking out against the two-headed hydra that we call Republican and Democrat
mm-hmm.
In Washington, D.C., the establishment that has got a death lock on the American government for quite some time now. And this is just the latest in a series of things that needs to be exposed. The American people need to understand that both sides are working together on this and that the only way we are going to get control of the country again is to wake up and realize that there is no Republican versus Democrat battle going on for control of this country.
That's right.
And we need to start looking at alternate parties.
That's right. Well, go to the paper from Crawford and take a look at all of those
Absolutely.
Amazing stories that he interviews that the editor there found. Also, go to Carl W. Schwartz's homepage. It's
Carl Schwartz.
It's just Carl Schwartz?
Carl Schwartz.
Carl Schwartz. K-A-R-L-S-C-H-W-A-R-Z.
Right.
.com.
And he will be, while you're there, you can sign up for his email list. I believe there's a link to that there, and I'll check to make sure. But
You just email him.
Yeah, and he'll put you on the email list. He sends out a mail list that's growing by the day and goes around the world with information that he's collecting on this story. And he's got some more interviews coming up that we'll point you to as he firms them up. So part three of that interview coming up tomorrow. And then, of course, Friday, our typical Friday night rant, as we talk about the news events of the week. I'm sure we'll have more to say about the Dubai Ports World episode. And, well...
anything else that comes along on 3-3.
That's right. Oh, interesting. Meanwhile, send your comments, questions, and complaints to radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
And you can join the forum at peeringintodarkness.com/forum. And until tomorrow, I'm Sharon Gilbert.
I'm Derek Gilbert. Thanks for listening to PID Radio.
Bye-bye. Gonna step up to the microphone. Say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of here. I'm new.